National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Two countries frequently in the news these days are Haiti and Iraq, and the news is rarely good news. But what is the real situation in those challenged places? What is life really like for Catholics on the ground? This week on Register Radio, we find out. I'm Jeanette DiMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host for Register Radio.
And I'm Matthew Bunsen, the Register's Senior Editor. Well, Jeanette, this week we're focusing on Haiti and Iraq, and we're going to be joined by two people who can give us remarkable eyewitness accounts to life in both places and how faith and hope are found even in the face of what can often be unbelievable suffering and loss.
That's right. Our conversation with Father Benedict Keeley on Iraq is a follow-up from last week's report from Edward Penton, who the two of them traveled to Iraq together earlier this month. But first on our show, we talked to Peter Jesserer Smith, who recently journeyed to Haiti. It's a country facing natural disaster. It seems like it's always facing natural disaster. It has extreme poverty and many political challenges. But it's also a place of hope, faith, and dignity. Peter, welcome home.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's great to be home, and it was great to be in Haiti.
Well, what brought you to Haiti?
Well, what brought me to Haiti was Cross Catholic Outreach had a program called Box of Joy. Mm-hmm. And it's a ministry that they do in conjunction with their on-the-ground church partners in Haiti to bring boxes of toys, school supplies, things that that kids might need and want.
And bring them joy.
there's a great deal of joy. These boxes are basically prepared by families and parishes and people over here, and then they are sent over to these schools and people in Haiti. I was brought with a number of journalists over to Haiti to see this program in action.
Yes, and I know from talking to you before the trip that there was a bit of hesitation. What were you going to see? How dire would the circumstances be, the situation be in Haiti? What you were expecting and what you saw, how did they match up?
Well, they really didn't match up, and this is where I was really surprised, because all I had to go on was the impressions I had from mainstream reporting, which was, Haiti has been hit by natural disasters and over and again, and there's right. So much poverty. I mean, so much of our media has portrayed Haiti as a hopeless cause. Mm-hmm. And I honestly had no idea what I was going to see. And what I ended up seeing was a far more hopeful and vibrant picture of Haiti that I'm really looking forward to bringing to the Register's pages in our upcoming print edition, because that's the thing, is that Haiti is a deeply Catholic country. It's a country of where the people, even though they're very, very poor, they have enormous resiliency and hope and a deep abiding faith in God. They're enormously hardworking. In Haiti, I did not see, in my travels from Port-au-Prince, the capital, all the way down to the devastated southern portion of Haiti near Lake Hai, I did not see people begging on the street. Mm-hmm. I saw people hard at work trying to just have the dignity of earning their own way, even though there was not really money to be had. People were working hard. Everybody carried themselves with a great dignity. I thought the way these people are walking, it's as if they were the sons and daughters of kings, and they know it. It's really remarkable. You have to see it. And in just the beautiful texture of the country, I mean, honestly, the cabs all have religious themes on them. You might see a cab named the Blood of Jesus, and maybe it's going to fill up at Immaculate Conception gas station. And maybe somebody's buying a ticket at Eternal Father Motto. It was rare to see a business. It was very rare to see a business with a secular name.
Talking, Peter, about that, the role of the church there. You mentioned that the vast majority of the population is ardently Catholic. But what did you see? What were your impressions of how the church is doing, and what is the church like in Haiti?
Well, I think that the church is a very important social force in Haiti and in Haiti's future. There are a lot of problems that Haiti has in terms of its governance and in terms of sort of a weak solidarity between the very upper class and the rest of the country. I mean, most of Haiti is poor. But what the church is really doing is building up the country's infrastructure with schools and hospitals. But education is really one of the key areas in which the church is working to bring about Haiti's eventual, really, social transformation. Because, and this is what I saw in the Box of Joy trip, and this is a really interesting story. The way that you teach solidarity is to teach it to children. Mm. And Haiti's elite are getting educated in Haiti's schools, and particularly through Catholic institutions. Mm-hmm. You know, the people at Projet Espoir, which runs a circle of schools in this area, they said, what you have received, give to others. And I saw these kids sharing the gifts that they had, and they've never received a gift, but sharing them with other kids who didn't have certain things or who may have needed them more. And other kids had said, you know, I'm going to go back and I'm going to share these things with my family and with others who don't have anything. So you'd think that it's just simply material, but it's actually not. It's teaching a very spiritual lesson that we all are in the same boat and we all have to share. So the church, through education, is going to be building the next generation of Haitian leaders who are going to say, you know what, we need policies in our government, and we need to take actions that support and lift up all Haitians.
And you have an
enormous amount of hope.
Yeah, you have a pretty young population there in Haiti, don't you?
Yes. Haiti is a very, it is a very young population, which is interesting. It's actually, and also has a very large diaspora population. And one of the interesting things is that for a long time, the diaspora have been sending a lot of money back to support people at home. But some of them haven't necessarily felt like investing themselves there. But somebody that I talked to who did said more and more Haitians in the diaspora are coming back to set up businesses and to persevere through the trials because they have so much hope for Haiti. And this is really a country worth investing in.
Sure. And, you know, in that, to that point, what does the Haitian church need the most? What can we give them?
Well, I think it's actually a two-way street. They need something and we need something. And this is something I discovered there. The Haitian church has a sense of what it really needs on the ground. There are various ministries. Cross Catholic Outreach has been supporting a number of them. But the church knows the local situation of the people, so they definitely need from us our material support, our spiritual solidarity, so that if we can strengthen whatever the church in Haiti needs, it'll be able to have a stronger voice in society and be able to build up important infrastructure to help uplift Haitians even more. But the thing is that I noticed that they have something that we need. In the United States, we have people walking around everywhere who have a lot of things, and they're spiritually dead.
Right.
And there's a lot of spiritual death and devastation that I didn't see in Haiti. I saw people materially devastated.
Sure, so it goes back to the spirit of what you saw in the Catholic spirit, the joyful spirit in the Haitian people. That's a huge difference. There they experience the devastation of their country and even sometimes political devastation, but they live in a spirit of peacefulness and you really find that is centered on faith.
Absolutely. And there's one story that comes to mind that I really want to tell, but which is I visited the home of this woman who. There were 13 people living in there, and if you have a small bedroom, it was probably as small as that, or if not smaller, depending on where you live. But it was basically a shack that with a tin roof that had collapsed in half. And in order to get in there, you really had to crawl down on your hands and knees into there. And there I probably had the most spiritually intimate experience that I've ever had, other than visiting the tomb of Jesus in Jerusalem and the baptismal site on the Jordan. But I couldn't stand in this place. But 13 people had lived here, after the Hurricane Matthew. But this woman received us with such dignity into her home. And then when I asked her to pray for me, I was expecting maybe she'd do it later, but she said, no, I'll do this right now. And so she asked me to kneel down, but she just prayed over me. But I could tell, I've never seen such a really deep and abiding faith in Jesus and in the Lord as I did in that the poorest place that I've ever been in front of this woman. She had such dignity and such faith that I just thought to myself, if only we had this faith in the United States, what wonders we could do.
Absolutely. What a remarkable thing to meditate on in the final weeks leading up to Easter, in these final weeks of Lent, and as we prepare for Holy Week, because, you know, obviously this time is a time of looking at the cross, embracing the cross, and trying to have a spirit of peace and joy despite the cross. And it sounds like the Haitian people have really been able to do that.
I don't think there's any way that a nation like Haiti could have survived without the deep abiding faith in God that its people have. And I think they have the keys for success and hope that John Paul II said were essential for any nation to have a future. And I think Haiti is something beautiful that we in the church in the United States can really be a part of, and it's worth us making sacrifices for, because if we can make some material sacrifices for their success in Haiti, for the church's success in Haiti, then, you know, maybe we can be fortunate to have some of their riches pass our way, spiritual riches pass our way.
Absolutely. Now, in terms of the lasting impression, I mean, this trip sounds like it has, you know, really made a mark on you, as many of your travels have. You had traveled to the Holy Land, and now you've just fallen in love, really, with the Middle East. What will you take away besides a bunch of pictures? Because I also know by lending you a camera how many pictures you take. But what will you also take away, the lasting impressions from this trip?
I think what I would take away is that with God, where God is welcomed and embraced, there is hope. Mm-hmm. And there is joy. And the work of the church is really beautiful in places that we don't really think of. And I would say that in many ways I was jealous of certain things that the Haitians had spiritually, because I was complaining about all these different things and inconveniences
of the trip, sure. Mm-hmm.
Of the trip before I got to Haiti. But when I got there, I felt spiritually everything got put in perspective, and I got to see that, you know, trust in God and don't place and let things flow off your back a little more. Because God has us all in the palm of his hand.
Right.
And he's with us no matter how much we suffer. The last image I could give people, and I'm going to have it in one of our stories, but is the church in Haiti is very much like a church that I saw. Haiti is very much like a church that I saw in a place called Camp Perrin, where the roof was completely blown off by Hurricane Matthew. I mean, mm-hmm. Hurricane Matthew killed about 1,000 people, at least in Haiti, and a lot of people are unaccounted for. And it was another disaster for a country that really had been crucified by natural disasters
right.
within 10 years. But the church was blown off. The church roof was blown off, and there was all this devastation. But the cross that stood above the altar stayed there. And it wasn't bolted in.
Wow.
It should have been flung away and cast, you know, aside somewhere. And the statues should have been torn down and toppled. But they stayed. And the priest I talked to said it was a sign from God that he was there in solidarity among the Haitians.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if God's there, I want to be there too, in solidarity with them.
Right. Well, that's so. What a beautiful message of hope, and it's the kind of hope that we see in many people who have lived in countries that, if you look at it on the surface, doesn't seem a cause for hope or a cause for joy. I think of Mother Teresa in Calcutta. I think of Cardinal Van Thuan in Vietnam, in imprisonment, mm-hmm. where he had hope. And here we can make that case in Haiti. And Peter, I look forward to your coverage when you file your reports on this this very interesting trip. We plan on publishing Peter's work in the April 16th print edition, which is our Easter print edition, and we hope that this the stories in that print edition will be a sign of Easter joy, the joy that and the hope that are present in the Haitian church, but the joy and the hope that should be present with all of us. Peter, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Jeanette. Always a pleasure.
When we come back, we will talk with Father Benedict Keeley about the situation on the ground in Iraq. This is Register Radio and EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More when we return.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner. Or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. We are joined now from London by Father Benedict Keeley. Father Benedict is a priest of the Diocese of Burlington, Vermont. As I said, he's currently in London, but he is the founder of Nazarene.org. It's a charity to aid and advocate persecuted Christians, especially Christians in the Middle East. He just came back from a trip to Iraq. He went with Register correspondent Edward Penton, who we had on our show last week. Father Keeley, it's so good to have you with us. What is the situation right now for Christians in Iraq?
Thank you, Jeanette, for having me. I first went to Iraq in May of 2014, just 9 months after most of the Christians were, mm-hmm. all of the Christians were driven out from the Nineveh Plain, a situation of terrible despair, everyone living in what they called caravans, which were basically kind of building cabins that, mm-hmm. you know, work crews have on their building sites. And now I went, just as you said, with Edward, wonderful correspondent for the Register, just last week. The situation is still dire. I mean, we hear on the news about the liberation of the Christian towns, but
right.
as you have seen, Edward's posted a number of his videos and his reports. The towns are empty, the towns are burned out, the churches are burned out, if not destroyed. The towns are full of booby traps,
mm-hmm.
and the Christians are really wondering what the future will bring, because they feel really, I hate to say it, they really feel abandoned by the West.
Really? Really? What was the purpose of your trip, and why was it important for you to go now?
Well, I wanted to go specifically for two reasons. One, to see whether the Christians can go back, and two, whether the Christians wanted to go back.
Sure.
You know, pretty basic. And the answer to the first question is, at the moment, no, they cannot go back, as I said, because of the situation and principally because of the lack of security.
Right.
The second question is more complicated. Do they want to go back?
Right.
Yes, many of them, like all of us, would want to go back to our ancestral homes. I mean, not just...
Right.
These are people who've not just lived in... You know, I hate to be rude, but, you know, Americans have lived in America for, 200 or 300 years. We've lived in England for, you know, 2,000 years. so, but they've lived there for more than 2,000 years. These are the people of the Bible. When
right.
we read our New Testament on Pentecost Sunday, and we hear that reading that often our wonderful readers mess up so badly, these are the people who were there from the beginning. All these Medes
right.
and Persians and Elamites and everything, these are the people who are on the Nineveh plain. Nineveh, we hear about Jonah.
Right,
all
of course.
All through Lent, we're hearing about Jonah and Nineveh. ISIS blew up Jonah's tomb.
Yeah,
Nineveh is Mosul.
Yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, there couldn't be, as you say, there couldn't be a people more rooted to a place than these men and women from the Middle East. So I hear the urgency with which you describe their situation. And, you know, you said something that I want to go back to. You talked about the West and them feeling abandoned by the West. Why is that?
Well, the trouble is, it's a bit like becoming a Catholic or not becoming a Catholic. You either get it or you don't get it. When you get it, you get it. And I got it really... in 2014, when I heard for the first time that Mosul would not have mass for the first time in 2,000 years, I remember just thinking, this is just awful. And then you go and you meet the people, you see the people, you hear their stories, and then you just get it. But it's tragic that our scriptures tell us that we are one body. They tell us that we, when one suffers, all suffers. But unfortunately, I think we're so busy, whatever all the excuses we offer, but... and then with the news cycles, I mean, we hear on the news 2 years ago about the Christians, and now I wouldn't mind betting most Catholics in America, most Catholics in Europe think, well, it's okay, I mean, Mosul's being liberated,
right.
They can all go back, everything's fine, but of course, that's just a fantasy.
Yeah, Father... Help listeners and Catholics in general to appreciate just how bad the situation was for the Christians in Mosul and on the Nineveh Plain.
Well, I would always use the example, which I think would help, especially American listeners, is the example of Hurricane Katrina. We remember under that awful time that so many residents of New Orleans had to leave, and the Christians in Iraq are called internally displaced persons. They're not even allowed to be called refugees because, in theory, they're in their own country.
Uh-huh.
Now, of course, everyone from New Orleans or wherever had to leave, or many people had to leave.
Including me. I'm from New Orleans.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. But you didn't lose your right to vote.
Right.
You didn't lose your right to leave the country. You didn't lose all your rights.
Right.
All the Christians who had to flee from the Nineveh Plain lost all their rights, including their rights to emigrate to another country and even visit. I mean, the grave scandal that upsets me perhaps almost the most is Christians who've tried to visit the United States and the United Kingdom were not exempt at all. In fact, far from it. For example, I know of a nun, a beautiful nun from Karakosh, one of the ancient Christian cities of the Nineveh Plain, who has a PhD. Doctorate in biblical theology from Oxford University here in England. Twice she's been denied a visa to visit England to pick up her PhD. Just
wow.
Last November, the British government denied a visa for the Archbishop of Mosul to visit. So we're obviously very scared in England of nuns and bishops. but the same thing has happened in America.
Sure.
Visas have been denied for priests and religious. It's a scandal. American Catholics, British Catholics, European Catholics should be absolutely scandalized. And the worst thing is most people don't know, so I suppose they can't be
right.
scandalized. But that's part of my, you know, obviously I'm passionate, you can probably tell. But
a little
I think
bit.
Part of the point is to wake people up.
Sure.
Well,
sure.
And part of that process of waking people up is helping them understand what is daily life like for a Christian in Iraq, certainly in the refugee camps in Erbil and elsewhere?
Daily life is for you and me to understand that these people were just like us. They had jobs, they were university educated. You know, sometimes we can think of, maybe it's a little bit prejudiced, but we can think of refugees as being I hate to say the word primitive, but
right. No, I
we know
you.
What we mean.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
These were people just like us. They had educations, university degrees, they had cars,
right.
They had nice houses. Now they live in these containers, effectively shipping containers, many of them. Some are in apartments, but they're also in apartments now that are shared with two or three other families for an apartment for one. They've lived like this for nearly 3 years now. They left with nothing. I mean, ISIS literally, we heard stories, Edward and I heard stories of people literally being told you must take your wedding rings off by
wow.
ISIS. I mean, they stripped them of everything, all their dignity. That's what daily life is like, and yet they live in hope that they will, please God, one day return, or maybe, if they can't return, be given a future in the United States or Europe.
You know, when I left New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina and during that time right after, I remember the outpouring of help from throughout the United States. I know what that kind of help feels like. I think it was, in a sense, easier for people because it was here in our own country to reach out and help. And also that help happened immediately. I think they did forget about us a little bit a year or two after. What can we do, Father? What can we do to help them?
Well, I don't think we shouldn't feel guilty in that. I can tell you from the beginning that one of the reasons I went the first time in 2015 was to really see that the help was getting there from wonderful organizations
sure.
like Aid to the Church in Need and Catholic Near East Welfare and my own little charity. But the church is really the only group that is helping. I mean, the UN, I'm not politically correct, the UN is rubbish. The UN is not doing anything. Government agencies are doing nothing. It's the church. So we can feel blessed and we should continue to give generously. I would say there are always three things: prayer, solidarity, and charity. Prayer first. Prayer is not a last resort. Prayer is a first resort. We once in a while, perhaps you hear in your intercessions on Sunday, let's pray for our persecuted brethren. Let's not just pray once in a blue moon.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pray regularly. I wish we would have a weekly rosary for the persecuted Christians. This is not going away. When ISIS is defeated, there'll be a baby ISIS. There'll be a new name.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows that. Everyone said that to us. Don't think it's finished. So prayer, solidarity, yes, help. Give generously, help these organizations, charity. But let's not imagine this is going away. The persecuted, Pope Francis has said, Christians are now the most persecuted religious group in the world, not just in the Middle East, in Nigeria, and Pakistan, all over the world. Perhaps my sign of hope is that the fortitude of these wonderful people in Iraq that I've met, I hope to see them soon in Syria, these wonderful people who've given everything for their faith, will give us in the West, who are somewhat slack and lethargic in our faith, will give us a little bit of intestinal fortitude.
Absolutely. You know, that was my next thought and really question for you is, what is their faith? How is it? How can you see it? How can you feel it? How can it aid us, the faith of these Christians?
Well, I can just tell you, Jeanette, what I've felt every time. I mean, I feel every time people are being so kind and saying thank you to me. And I mean, I've done nothing, but they strengthen me. They give me courage every time I come back. I just think. You just look at children, wives, and as I said, they've lost everything. They lost everything for one reason. They're not perfect, just like us. I mean, they have their sinners, and they have their own problems, but all of them were driven from their homes and their towns and their livelihoods for one reason, because they're Christians, because they refused to convert or die, which was the only option, really, ISIS gave them. And so they give me tremendous strength when I... You know, we have a few struggles in the West. It's getting worse, but we have a few struggles. We have to speak in public, perhaps, about our faith a bit more. And let's just be inspired by them. That's what helps me, that I think of these people and look at Mass. I mean, Mass, I was in Mass just two Sundays ago in Erbil, Edward and I, your wonderful correspondent, and it was jam-packed. There's no problem with mass attendance
right, wow.
in Erbil. It was jam-packed, men, women, children. No one's complaining about mass times or, you know, it's there's the faith.
Right. It's in action. Well, Father, before we end this conversation, I would like to point people to where they can aid your organization. Can you give us a way of reaching out?
Well, it's very kind of you. I mean, we support a number of charities, particularly Aid to the Church in Need, which is a wonderful Catholic charity under the guidance of the Holy Father. My little charity is called Nazarean.org, Nazarean.org, and we help Aid to the Church in Need as well as a number of our own projects. So there are a number of Catholic Near East Welfare Association, a number of great Catholic organizations, which I can assure your listeners and readers, the money gets right to the people that need it.
Now, your organization is called Nazarean.org.
Nazarean.org, yeah.
That's Nazarean.org.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about how that was founded?
Well, I was, as I said, way back in July, August of 2014.
It's so weird to be saying that.
I was praying, so it's a fruit of prayer. I was walking behind, I was a parish priest in Stowe, Vermont. I was walking along saying my rosary and just almost in despair about the situation. As I said, thinking that Mass was not celebrated in Mosul for the first time in 2,000 years. And I thought, I happened to be wearing one of those rubber bracelets that people wear for various organizations.
Right.
I thought, well, we can do something. At least we can make a rubber bracelet.
Mm.
And so from that, we got lapel pins and various other things marked with the Arabic Nun, the N in Arabic, which ISIS marked the houses of Christians, rather like the Nazis used the Star of David to mark Jews. ISIS used the Arabic N to mark the houses of Christians. They've done this for centuries, but it's new again now. And so we started producing these items, and through the good work of a wonderful friend of yours, Raymond Arroyo, who publicized this for us, we started producing these things, and we've managed through that to give really close to $100,000 now to ACN, Aid to the Church in Need, and various other groups. It's just a little tiny little project,
right? Of course,
from one idea, but
it also
caught on.
It had a media campaign. I mean, we saw this symbol on many a Facebook page, and I think we maybe need to revisit it on many a Facebook page.
Well, we do. Because as I said, it's not going to. I do think if you take one thing away, is the idea that, well, maybe when we hear that Mosul's liberated, please God, in a week or two or a couple of weeks, people will think it's all over.
Right.
But it's, I think this is, I'm afraid to say, and it's a little bit bleak, but it's certainly our generation's conflict, if not even beyond that, because it's not going on. Prejudice against Christians and anti-Christian violence from Islam, radical Islam, is going to be a long-term problem for us.
Absolutely. Well, the Register will not let up in telling this story, and we are grateful that you have been a source and a friend to us and have worked with Edward and many of our other correspondents on telling this story. So thank you very much for being a part of our show, and we will talk to you again, I know.
Thank you for all your help, Jeanette. God bless you all.
Thank you. Our April 2nd print edition is where you can find Edward Penton's story, The Long Lent of Iraqi Christians. And remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.